Oscar Poker.
I'm just above Ventura. It's a very, very beautiful, radiant, blue, perfect day, and the heat has come back, and it's almost like spring or even summer. And I can't really read the bath to win. So maybe you could review them for me. What I read briefly on the email that came to me was President one for Best Picture Director Leo Emmanuel Lubezki and one other. What was the other one?
The Revenant includes Best Film, Best Director, Leading Actor, Cinematography, Sound. It won Sound.
Okay.
Yeah, it won Sound. It was up for Makeup and Hair, and Mad Max beat it there. It wasn't okay. Revenant was not up for Production Design at BAFTAs, and Mad Max won that. It beat Revenant for the Editing Award, and it beat Revenant for Makeup, and that's it. So it's not like, you know, people are going to be tempted to say Mad Max beat The Revenant in all these categories, but it really didn't. It only beat it in two categories because they weren't head-to-head on every category like they are at the Oscars.
Can you imagine why anybody would argue in favor of The Revenant's production design? It's all outdoors, pretty much. So
well,
where's the production?
Yeah, well, it's Jack Fisk, I think. There's some production design, though. There is. There's the frontier, you know, where they go and they stop, and there's, you know, there is some. But, yeah, it's basically Mother Nature.
There's that Indian village that was massacred with all those bodies over the place. That was, I guess, obviously designed. But otherwise, it's really not, there's not a lot of design to it. So anyway, so what does this mean for you, the authority, the one who believes in, has believed and has good reason to believe statistically in the past president. This is a year of blowout. I think one of you got to answer that one. What does that mean to you? And secondly, I guess there really isn't. This is not a crazy who knows type of year anymore. It looks like Revenant all the way, right?
It kind of does. I mean, if I, like I said to Tom when I was podcasting with him, I think that if I was going to tell someone what should they bet on, they should bet on the Revenant. And you know, I think that there are 2 years that I will have had when I finally close out my experience watching the Oscars, where every question I had, every question I ever wondered was answered. And one of those was 2010, when The Social Network won every single critics award you could win, and still lost the Oscars. So that pretty much blew out the stats for critics. And this year, because if The Revenant wins, which it looks likely that it's going to, but we can talk about that in a minute. I still want to bring up something that you hate talking about, but it has to be talked about, which is the preferential ballot. And it does make a difference. It might not make a difference this time, but it is something to think about. But let me just say that if The Revenant does win, which I think that any reasonable person is going to predict it and should predict it to win at this point, it will blow out every single stat, almost every stat that I know of, that I use personally to
can you give us a brief rundown of the stats that it has blown out? Because that's very significant.
Yeah.
For anybody.
There are a couple that are going to hold. The Ace Eddie nomination that Spotlight did not get, that still holds if The Revenant wins. The DGA nomination, obviously, everybody knows that that, you know, you can't win without a DGA nomination. DGA win always calls Best Picture or Best Director. So even if the awards split, if Iñárritu wins director, that stat still holds. But there are a couple of other ones that are pretty tried and true, and that's screenplay. This Revenant becomes the first movie to win the BAFTA without a screenplay since The Last Emperor. So that's a pretty big one. People usually like screenplay, but you can see how The Last Emperor would be a good example for Revenant. They're very similar in a way. Like, they're big, beautiful epics. You know, Bertolucci and Iñárritu, you could put them in the same category. And, you know, you can look at the Last Emperor, and it's a movie that doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but it's an incredibly beautiful visual experience, and that's a lot like what The Revenant is. So I would compare it more with Last Emperor than I would Titanic, which, you know, Titanic just had a flat-out bad screenplay. It might be a good movie, but it has a bad screenplay, and but it was another movie.
Allow me to dispute that very quickly. It has a really good structure, a very good basic story. It does pay off in a lot of ways, but the rap against the screenplay for Titanic is that Jim Cameron could have used somebody to finesse the dialogue
exactly.
And make it a little less on the nose, a little less, you know, whatever right. You want to call it. It was a little bit bleedy in terms of the romantic sentiments, but you know, there's just a lot of on the nose dialogue, and if he had just fixed that part. It was a good story. It was a good structure. Yeah. Good idea.
But The Revenant is like Titanic in that it is one of those big epics that only come around every so often. And that's why it's starting to seem like it's inevitable. And I kind of think what might have happened in the beginning is that a lot of people just didn't see it, you know, early on, that it took people a while to actually catch up with the screener and actually watch the movie. And that might be why it didn't win a lot of early awards. And it might be that once people saw it, they just were like, wow, that is an incredible second feature back-to-back by this guy. You know, I've never seen anyone do that. I've never seen anyone make a movie and then come back with an even better movie. You know, I mean, a lot of people disagree with that. A lot of people think Birdman is better. But I think that just in terms of sheer ambition, The Revenant is sort of in a league of its own. Like, it's just, it is. Like, it's undeniable in that way. Do I like the movie best? No, I don't. I'll just be honest about that. I really don't like it as much as I like at least three of the other films, but that are up for awards. But I do keep coming back to the...
I don't like it as much emotionally as I like Spotlight.
Right.
But I recognize it as being quite the achievement and it is a big reach type of film.
Yeah.
And I respect and very much looking forward to my third viewing of The Big Short, because I certainly, that kicked up big time when I saw it the second time.
Yeah, I love it, but I understand why it's not a movie that a lot of other people come to. I mean, I particularly love it because I'm a cerebral person and I really like something that's deeply, deeply, like, complicated this movie, it seems confusing, but the more you look at it, the tighter it becomes and the more condensed and interesting and just like layer upon layer upon layer. And you know, that's not a Best Picture winner. Like, those kind of movies don't usually, that's why it was so surprising when it won the Producers Guild. And I think that the only reason it did was because The Revenant is such a number one movie, and it's got, like, it will be the worst reviewed film to win Best Picture since Crash. It's got the worst.
What is the Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes and Revenant?
It's across the board the worst reviewed. I mean, it's got the most amount of negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a lower score on Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic. It's got a B+ cinema score, which is pretty low. The user ratings are all lower than all the others. So it is an interesting kind of choice for Best Picture. It's not the usual. All these other movies have had since Crash. We're like in Crash and A Beautiful Mind territory in terms of reviews. So it's unusual for a movie.
I'm driving. I can't do this. But what is the actual, average rating for Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic for the Revenant. Now, isn't it in the 80s somewhere? Or
no, it's not. It's 70s.
Oh, okay.
It's 70s. It's, I mean, it's not terrible, you know? It's not like a bad movie, but it's divisive. Yeah. And that, we were talking about stats, and one of the stats I rely on is that movies that are that kind of divisive and poorly reviewed don't win Best Picture. That's like Les Miserables was like one of those movies. Life of Pi was one of those movies.
Right.
So it's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
Your theory is that the producers who were voting in the PGA Darrell F. Stanek Award had not really seen The Revenant or hadn't really paid attention to it, or maybe were just voting out of disinterest in voting for it, and they just loved The Big Short, something like that?
I don't think with the Producers Guild that's the case. I think with the Producers Guild, it really was a matter of three films coming in close to number one. That's Big Short, Spotlight, and The Revenant. And The Revenant is a number one movie. So it's not a number two or a number three movie. It might be now that the Oscars are coming back in. But Steve Pond or somebody said that it has to come in with 50% or more support at number one to win without having to trigger a recount. And once they trigger a recount, that's when they start stacking the number twos and number threes up on top. And that's how The Big Short won, because it was more of a number two movie than The Revenant is. So that's why Big Short beat The Revenant. Probably we're going to see something similar at the Oscars. And it's going to be a tricky thing. Any of those three movies could still win with this preferential ballot. We just don't know how they're coming. I think that the enthusiasm for Iñárritu, though, from the DGA and from the BAFTA, I think that that's going to drive a lot more people to put it at number two. So I think they're going to go, I loved Spotlight, but, you know, The Revenant's really good. It deserves it, too. And they might put it at number two, whereas just coming into the race at the producers.
Remember, we have to remember to anybody listening and to ourselves, the voting only began last Friday, right?
For Oscars?
Yeah,
for Oscars, yes.
Right,
that they're just getting their ballots now. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who hate The Revenant coming in. They're going to put it low on their ballot. There's going to be a lot of people who love it, you know. So if it was me, I would just say, just predict The Revenant and be done with it, because it's too complicated to predict whether or not the other two could pull it through. I won't be surprised if another movie wins, though, because the Producers Guild always has called. So stats we're looking at breaking. The Producers Guild calling the shots. No screenplay nomination. No SAG Ensemble nomination. Bad reviews. So, you know, really bad reviews. Like 50 negative reviews. And I think Crash is like 59. So it's right up there. It actually is 80.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by 50 negative reviews? What does that mean?
Well, I look at Rotten Tomatoes, because Rotten Tomatoes, they're basically always nice to you at Rotten Tomatoes. It's really easy to get a high score there because they tend to be so, because they're 50-50 and most reviews are sort of mixed to positive or mixed to negative. So, for instance, well, I guess Revenant actually has 82 on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't that bad. And it has 76 on Metacritic, which is really low.
Okay.
But, for instance, Big Short has like 88 on Rotten Tomatoes, something like that. But it's not much higher on Metacritic. So it is also semi-mixed compared to Spotlight, which is beloved across the board, you know. But Spotlight is more in keeping with the kind of movie that usually wins reviews-wise. You know, it's usually a really positive movie with not a lot of negative reviews. Like if you look at 12 Years a Slave, if you look at Argo, if you look at Birdman, The Artist, The King's Speech, all these movies since the preferential ballot, they've all been like under 10 or at the most 20 negative reviews. And Revenant is at 50.
There's only one thing that can save, the Spotlight, conceivably, would be that people who are just starting to vote now, you're saying they're only just getting the ballot. Why wouldn't they have gotten the ballot before? I mean, if they could have started to vote Friday, surely the Academy had allowed them to have the ballot and consider everything as of last week, right? I'm not sure.
I have to find out. I'm not sure. All I heard was that they were sending out ballots, but you're right. They might have been able to vote online sooner than that.
Yeah.
But
maybe there are some out there who will say, you know, now that it's all decided, quote unquote, and you know, the ribbon's going to win, you know, the hell with it. I'm going to push back and go somewhere else. Maybe that's
what
will happen.
That usually happens, but. I just think that I think in terms of scope and reach, I don't think you can beat The Revenant. I don't think I can sit here and say I think it's the best movie, but I think that people will look at that versus Spotlight or Big Short and they'll think those are good movies. Those are conventional movies. They're really good and really well done. But how many times in your life have you seen a movie like this? You know, not often. You know, movies like this don't get made and they don't get seen very often. So I just have to get over my minor annoyance about it winning because it's, you know, it's an ambitious film and it's the kind of thing that film awards were really made for. You know, they're really made to award excellence, high achievement in film. And you can't say that The Revenant isn't a high achievement. It is a high achievement, you know?
Right.
So
But the landslide, the snow, the snow tumbling down the mountain, the avalanche, when Leo happens to look up, and that moment was actually created by a helicopter whirring its blades at the snow just beyond sight, and I just thought that was amazing. That one moment right there was really worth a whole lot to me.
I know. I mean, it literally transports you to a different place. Like, watching it the second time, I just was like, this is so surreal. I've never had a movie that feels like virtual reality like this one does. Like, you feel like you're right standing next to Leo during the whole thing, you know? It's incredible. I mean, it really is incredible. So hats off to them, you know, and I can't, you know, as much as I would love to see my favorite film win, I can't sit here and say that a movie like that doesn't deserve a whole shitload of Oscars, you know. It does.
Yeah.
It deserves it. They succeeded. The movie didn't bomb. You know, if it had bombed at the box office, there's no way they would have won. But they made a lot of money. You know, it's really popular. They're bringing people to the theater. And another thing about it is it's hard to...
Go ahead. I'm just saying, isn't it something like $365 million worldwide right now?
Yeah, I usually look at the domestic number, but even that's like, it's right around the same money as Mad Max made, actually. They both made the same sort of money domestically, and they both had similar budgets. So domestically, it's not a box office blowout, but internationally it is. You know, at the end of the day, I still won't be surprised if it turns out like a Life of Pi kind of situation where the prizes do split, but I do feel like I you know, I have no idea how it's all going to turn out, but I think you could do worse than just predicting The Revenant all the way down the line. You know, if you just want to predict that it's going to sweep, it might just sweep. You know,
all along, the strongest, most adamant conviction on your part, on many people's part, on my part, I would say, is that people are going to be very, very loath to give a same director Oscars 2 years in a row, or the movie that she made 2 years in a row. That's really something they don't want to do because it just seems like it's too much.
Yeah.
Let's spread it around. Let's give somebody else that. You know, he won his Oscar last year. Fine, that's enough. Let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And yet, it just happened. If you had told me at the beginning this was going to happen, I would have been very, very surprised.
But I think these things are cumulative, and I think that I think Anne Thompson's right when she says that the sort of sentiment is split between Big Short and Spotlight. They're sort of splitting a similar I still think The Revenant would win if it was in the position it's in now, up against just one of those movies. But up against two of those movies, it seems to really stand out. Some people, by the way, are still going to be predicting that it won't win. They're still going to be hanging on to the fact that the Oscars, that the BAFTA, you remember, they didn't give any Ritu director and picture last year. They gave it to Linklater. So, it, you know, for them to pick The Revenant isn't that surprising, given that. He's not making history there. He made history at the DGA. And I think I had it backwards. I actually made a huge miscalculation there, because I've never actually lived through a year like this. This is a first timer. But what I think is, it's actually the opposite is true. I think people are more impressed with you if you're coming okay. in for a second back-to-back round like that. My friend told me that he did some research, and he said that it's really rare for a director to come into the Oscar race with a back-to-back. It is incredibly rare. Like, we've only really seen him do it with actors and stuff, and they don't usually give acting awards. But to have a director come in twice is unusual. And he said that that makes it special, and that makes it add to the prestige of the movie and the excitement and the buzz, as opposed to taking away from it. You know, it actually makes people more impressed with Iñárritu and the film than they would be, than they might even be otherwise if there hadn't been a Birdman. You know what I mean? The fact that he made both of them is sort of like shock and awe
to people. Has anybody won, tell the people who are not statisticians, has anyone ever won two Oscars in a row for anything?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure they have. Yeah, the actors have won, actresses have won, but two directors in the past have won. Two, I think I can't remember, but it's going all the way back, you know, and so he won't be making Oscar history.
Oh, so we don't know this? You're a big specialist, so am I.
I don't want to misquote. It's something like John Ford and George Stevens. It's something like those two. George Stevens and John Ford, so it's way, way back somewhere. But so he won't be making history if he wins Best Director. He will be making history if he wins Best Picture, because no director in 88 years has seen their movie win back-to-back. It's just never happened. So that is unusual. That's where he'll be making history. And he's already made history because he's made history twice, because he just won the EGA, and Revenant just won with terrible reviews and...
Right.
And no screenplay nomination. So he's breaking.
Why did he get terrible reviews? It's not terrible. If it's got an 82, that's obviously not terrible.
Well, let's
if
say mixed. It has mixed reviews.
Why are you saying that? That's wrong to say that.
No, it
if
does.
You, if
it has
terrible
mixed.
Reviews. It's below 50 or 40 or
no,
it 60,
no. It's,
you know, that's terrible.
For an Oscar movie to have 50 negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, that's unprecedented in the modern era. It's unprecedented. But what it tells me is that the people who write reviews, the film culture, the people who gave Spotlight Best Picture and George Miller Best Director, they're just not Team Revenant, you know? They're just not. It's like A Beautiful Mind, where everybody wanted Fellowship of the Ring to win, and A Beautiful Mind was winning, and everybody hated it for winning. Or like The Aviator and Million Dollar Baby. You know, sometimes film culture splits really harshly with industry culture, and this is going to be one of those years. People will be bitching about The Revenant for years and years to come. They'll be talking about what a shitty movie it is and how they will be. I'm telling you, people like on the web and film critics and stuff like that, they're just going to go nuts on The Revenant for years. But industry people are the ones who vote, and they're the ones who will be giving out the awards. So... But this is going to be one of those really divisive winners where the people who write about the stuff are going to take it to task constantly for having no story, for being pretentious, all the things that they've accused it of all along.
How is it? Who's saying it's pretentious?
I'm not. But they are. A lot of people say that. And, you know, I've been defending Shakespeare in Love for years. Like, sometimes, and Chicago is another one that gets a lot of shit. You know,
Sasha, that was a really bad experience for me watching that film. That
yeah,
was
I
very,
know, but I'm just telling you, all the major critics like Joe Morgenstern and people like that, all and David Edelstein, they all gave bad reviews to The Revenant. So it's not a critic's darling by any means. It didn't win any critics' awards at all. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just not revered by them or respected. So that's why I say it might win this award for Best Picture, but it's going to win Best Director and Best Actor for sure. No question.
It also has done very well commercially. You know, the critics can only be out on their little life raft in the middle of their ocean for so long. They got to take a look at who they are. They got to think things over. You can't just say it's bullshit, it's shit, it's not satisfying, it's pretentious. It's not a pretentious film. It's a fairly open and simple-minded film in a way. It's not certainly not trying to think too tricky. It's just this happens. It's about survival, struggle. I don't think there's enough of a story myself. I don't find it that emotionally affecting, frankly.
Yeah.
But it is quite the consummate the composition. It really is the beautiful painting. It's the huge canvas. It's all the detail, all the realism.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's all Chivo all the way. You know, it's a tribute to a great cinematographer. And Annie Noritu, in that it's his concept. You know, it's like one of those people say, well, why would you make this movie? It costs so much money. It's just about some guy suffering, blah, blah, blah. But it's sort of like the people who climb Everest. It's like, because it's there. It's a big challenge. Yeah. You know, I just want to try it. I want to see if I can pull it off. And he did, you know. Hats off to him. I mean, I can't, but I agree with you. I don't think that there's enough of a story or any story there, really. But there is vital, vibrant, exciting filmmaking, you know, that you don't see very often. And you know, Titanic got a lot of shit too, but I think time has won. I think time has sort of bore out that Titanic is a good movie. It's well remembered. People think of it fondly, you know, all that shit went down when it won, because everybody wanted LA Confidential to win. That's sort of faded into the background, and people sort of acknowledge that it's a great, you know, still a great film.
Do you think there's any surprises in the four acting categories, or is that pretty much locked up?
Well, I don't think Mark Rylance is going to win the Oscar. I don't, but a lot of people do. I still think Sylvester Stallone is going to win that. And I don't think Kate Winslet's winning supporting actress either, but a lot of people seem to think that she will. I still think that Alicia Vikander's...
Don't you think it's Alicia Vikander and supporting actress?
Yeah, Alicia Vikander and Sylvester Stallone, I think, will win the Oscars. But other than that, the only unpredictable categories are going to be between The Revenant and Mad Max for a lot of the tech awards, because they're going to go head-to-head. And you're going to see which movie that the Academy voters like the best. But I would lean towards The Revenant if I were people, because I feel like it's got the buzz, it's got the momentum right now in its favor.
Yeah.
So it's going to win a lot of Oscars.
Well, here it is. There's no more suspense, and there's 2 weeks to go.
I know.
What else?
If I had known it was going to turn out this way, I would not have agreed to go to the Oscars. I don't really need to. I don't need to see The Revenant win. You know, it's not that I think it's a bummer. It's just I'm not excited about it. I'm admiring of them, because I definitely told everybody I knew involved in that film, including the publicist, that I didn't think it was going to win Best Picture. So I'm really, really wrong about The Revenant. It's sort of showing me that no matter how much you think you know, you really know nothing when it comes to sort of figuring out what people are going to like. You know, human beings are, at the end of the day, they're unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to do and what they're going to think about things.
I'll tell you what is predictable, and that's the Blogger-Rooney Chattering Class. Feels just like the people on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. They all create this narrative that it's, who knows what's going to happen in the political world, even though we all know it's probably going to be Hillary versus Trump. But you listen to those guys on the news channels, it's, who knows? It's a wild year. Anything could happen.
Oh,
and that's the net they keep selling. It's the same thing with the Blogger-Rooney class. They do the same thing. You know, nobody wants to just say it's over, so they're going to keep talking about it in some way.
I really hope that it's not true that Trump is the nominee. I really hope that's not true, because that's just a horrifying thought. That's edging too close to him becoming president for my taste, you know.
Did you see the debate on last night?
Yeah, I watched it.
What a brawl that was. I mean, really, that was like they were just short of coming to blows.
Yeah.
Particularly Trump. He was really, I mean, he just didn't say, you're so weak, and you're so bad, and you're such a liar. I mean, that was like not dignified political task.
And then
again, it was a blood sport, and you were fascinated, you know. I was watching it going, this is a bit.
But have you ever seen a presidential candidate act like that? Like
nope,
that?
Never.
No,
neither,
ever. I mean, it's weird that he keeps doing so well. And I listen to Nate Silver a lot on the polls, you know, to hear what's going on. And and he was always sort of treating the whole Trump thing like a joke until this last time I listened to him. And now he said, you know, he's doing what I'm doing with The Revenant. He's like, I have to admit that I have to start taking Trump seriously now.
But tell me, just be creative, find it in your heart, find it in your mind somehow. Give me a scenario in which he loses. in which somebody else wins. How does that happen?
Donald Trump, you mean?
Yeah.
Trump. Well,
nobody has the surge. Nobody has any surge against him.
No.
Not really.
I sort of think, and listen, how can I trust myself after thinking that the my judgment is so off, unless the Revenant somehow loses, then I'll be vindicated. But, like, I have no idea. I think, but my instincts tell me, and clearly my instincts are not right, but John Kasich is the one that I would fear, because he is normal, quote unquote, and he comes off as normal. And I think there might be a point where Trump goes just a little bit too far. It doesn't look like it from the polls. I mean, he's leading. He's way ahead of everybody else. Like, and so it's hard.
John doesn't address the anger, Sasha. The big, like, fuck everything. We want somebody who's pure and true and strong and if necessary, tough. But Bernie and Trump are the same thing in a way. It's just two sides of a different coin.
That's right. They are. Exactly right. Bernie's losing the PR game lately, though. He was doing really well for a while, but there's a noticeable shift happening with that, I think, especially after Scalia died and people just started, shit just got real all of a sudden.
How does that help or hurt Bernie and the Scalia thing?
Well, I think people are, you know, I don't know.
I was die or what do you mean?
I just saw it I don't think that's it. I just saw it on, like, the headlines. People were saying that it's shifting, you know, a couple of different columnists said that it just made them start to think more, you know, seriously about the Supreme Court and about Hillary Clinton getting in there and not letting a Republican get in there. Because basically, look at it like this, right? If they lose Scalia, okay, so he's gone. Now they've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's like, what, 96 or something? She's not going to last. She's going to go. So that's two Supreme Court justices that have to be filled. And they're all worried as hell that Hillary's going to get in there, or, you know, Bernie or whatever, and appoint two Democratic Supreme Court justices. That's two for the blue.
Fantastic. That's why I really want her to win, because I know that in the end of the day, she's probably going to win because of the African American and Hispanic vote.
That's right.
She's lost the white left. The white left doesn't believe in her, but they're going to accept her at the end of the day. Like Bill Maher said, if you can't have that really nice salmon on the airplane,
I just stopped listening to him. And I've also been listening to reading a lot of different people who are switching their support in the progressive left, writing on Daily Cause, who are switching their support from Bernie because they see that he's just such a one-note candidate who can't expand his way of thinking. Hillary really wiped up the floor with him on the last debate. She really showed that she has much more of a broad sense of the problems facing them than he does. He's just like Trump, you know, both of them are saying all the same kind of things. Like, we're sick of government, you know, on Bernie's side.
She can't debate away the fact that she took so much money from Wall Street. I mean, she just doesn't look clean. She looks
like
she's
compromised. That's fine. That's in the Bill Maher, Susan Sarandon world. But that world is shrinking fast. It's not a big enough world to win the Democratic nomination. And he's not doing what Obama did. He's not stepping up and expanding. Obama, during his run to beat Hillary, he didn't just hit one point hard and say, we're having a revolution for this, like, small group of white people who are angry. He spread it out, and he broadened, and he reached a lot of people, including me. I was a Hillary supporter. I switched my support to him because I believed in him. I loved what he was saying. Bernie's not like that. He is very still, narrow-minded. He's been saying the same stuff since the 1980s. You know, he's like, he's one-note Bernie, and he can do that thing really well.
What's so bad about drilling home the same point over and over again? Some people just don't listen. You got to say it over
and
over.
Because it's a big country, and there are a lot of different problems facing Americans, not just that one problem, you know?
That's the one thing that's facing our country. There is no fairness. There is no representation. The corporations own the politicians. He's right. He's completely right.
He is right.
I mean,
he's 100% right.
He's not addressing ISIS and climate change and all the other things, but he is right. But Hillary agrees with him. That's why I'm not that unhappy if she wins, because she's more or less on the same page.
Yeah.
The only thing is, In my son's generation, they don't trust her.
I know they don't, but that, but it just, you just have to reason with them and say, look, you've been listening to her take attacks from the right for decades, multiple decades. So that's why they don't trust her, because they put out a really successful negative smear campaign against her, and now the left is doing it too. That's what turned me against Bernie and Bernie supporters, is when they started going after her like the right wingers and started sending links from like Daily Caller and all of these right wing news. I was like, what the I want no part of this movement. You guys, you just jumped the shark for me. And so they're going to learn a hard lesson, unfortunately, and they might just disconnect from politics the way I did in the 80s when I had to watch Reagan get in for two terms, you know. But you have, there is a reality that has to be addressed. You can't just live in a fantasy world where Bernie's going to make the big banks break up. Bernie's going to give us free college. Bernie's going to make us all have single-payer health care.
He at least wants to. He at least wants to. You know, that's not a dream, Sasha. I've told you to watch Michael Moore's film. He actually
No, don't, Seth. You're quoting.
Looked at it. You refused to even look at the movie.
I watched his movie. Yes, I did watch it. And at the end, he makes a case for having a woman president, and then he doesn't even go and endorse Hillary Clinton. So screw him. I have no interest in anything he has to say anymore. And yeah, he wants socialism. Guess what? It's never happening. We have a whole country of people on the other side who don't want that. And a lot of Democrats don't. A lot of Democrats don't want us to be paying for everybody's college.
Right now, Sasha, we have a socialistic government that provides for various things from fire control to police to, you know, I mean,
yeah,
we are taxed.
We do, but he's saying, I'm going to raise taxes on the middle class. And I know, and you know, because we've grown up in this country, if there's one way to lose an election, you say, I'm going to raise taxes on the middle class. It's just really as simple as that. Whether people aren't, look at how the Oscar race is going. People aren't complex thinkers. You know, they're very black and white. And if they hear that, they're not going to vote for him, no matter how much they like him, you know. Then they're not going to want to do that. They're not going to. Also, we also know, realistically speaking, you and I both know that this Congress is so obstinate that both of them are going to be, it's going to be hard for either of them to put any programs across, both of them. But what we need is a fighter. We need someone who will fight them, who will fiercely fight them. Both of them are fighters, but she is far more well-connected. She's far more powerful. She has the entire support of the government behind her. She has all the senators, all the representatives endorsing her. She has all the union members endorsing her. She has more powerful celebrities. She's got George Clooney, she's got Ben Affleck, she's got Steven Spielberg, she's got Barbara Streisand all backing her. And she, I mean, there's no contest here. One is gonna be effectual and one is an outsider rebel who, you know, who won't have a lot of people. People who work closest with Bernie Sanders don't even endorse him. That's how bad it is for Bernie Sanders.
What does that mean?
That means that people see him as, you know, an obstinate, kind of argumentative, stubborn congressman. And he's not, there's somebody, they're saying, this is somebody I can't work with. I don't want to work with him. I can't work with him. So I'm not going to endorse him. And that's the difference between them, is that she's more diplomatic. She's been in government a long time. She has a lot, people don't hate her in government the way the media portrays people hating her out in the public. Now, the one thing Hillary doesn't have is that she's not charismatic. You know, she doesn't have that movie star thing that an elected leader needs. And Bernie does have that. So that's,
you know, did you look at the people that she did not get in New Hampshire? And, I mean, she got nobody except for over 65 and
yeah,
over 200.
Yeah, you got to let go in New Hampshire, because here's the thing the media doesn't want you to talk about. The fact is, when you just look at the Democrats who voted, it was pretty much an equal split between them. And the reason Bernie did better was because he drew in a lot of independents. He had people coming in, college students coming in, and NRA guys, you know, because they like Bernie because he's not coming after their guns. And so he's got a lot of NRA people supporting him. But it's almost all independents. So, you know, on the one hand, that's great for him. It means he can bring in all those independents. But it's also not great because it doesn't mean that he's also got the Democratic base behind. You need both, you know.
Well, I hope it starts going well for her, and I certainly would not be unhappy, and I really hope it works out for her. I think probably in March, right, next month, she's going to start gathering, you know, again, the African-American and Hispanic votes, they just don't seem to be Bernie people. And I think it's because of low information. I don't think they're really looking at it. They feel on some level that she's more on their team because she was the wife of a liberal, but not really that liberal, a president. And that's why they're staying with her. They don't seem to be reachable. So it would be intransigence of the African-American Hispanic vote. I think she's probably going to, you know, have it pretty much locked up by April. Wouldn't you imagine? March, April, something? Late March?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see. Unless there's some really big scandal that is going to hit her, then yeah. I mean, and you know, I think it's going to be close in Nevada. I think Bernie's still got a little momentum, but I do feel the shift happening. For a while there, it looked like he was really going to overtake her because of the amount of money he was raising and the people who believe in him really believe in him. But the problem with Bernie is that he didn't do that thing Obama did. He didn't expand once he had the moment. He had a moment, he had a lead, he had momentum, but he went on that debate and he just did exactly the same thing. And you can't do that. You have to be able to talk to women, to talk to blacks, talk to Hispanics, you know. You have to reach all the different, you can't just hammer away at, this is what millennials want to hear, so I'm going to tell them what they want to hear.
I haven't explored African-American issues at all. I don't know what you know, he's been very sympathetic and open to and supportive of equal pay. I mean, you can't just characterize him as a single issue.
I'm not characterizing him that way. I'm saying that's what it came off like at the debate. That's how it came off on the debate. He wasn't able to reach... And if you look at different things, this is what Nate Silver's always saying. He's like, what I'm not seeing with Bernie Sanders is I'm not seeing increasingly growing support. And I don't see it on his Twitter. He's only got 1.5 million Twitter followers by now. And shouldn't he have more than that? And Hillary's got like 5 million and Trump's got like 6 million. And Bill Clinton has even less than Hillary. But Bernie at 1 million something, like to me, I looked at it a couple of months ago and it was around the same number. So he has strong support, but it doesn't look like the support is ever growing. It's just not. It's a medium fabrication. They like doing stories about him because it draws the hype and the attention, but it doesn't. There aren't stats to show that he's really reaching a lot of people and that everybody out there is hearing that message and going, yeah, you know. It just
doesn't. You know what I'm really disappointed in, and now that I'm starting to see where this is all going, I think that Elizabeth Warren made a huge tactical error and decided not to run. And she could have been the one. She really could have had it. She would have had the whole, you know, the granny vote, the whole. She could have beaten Hillary Clinton if she had done it, I think.
I don't think she wanted to, though, because I don't think she wanted to get in Hillary's way. I think they're good friends. And also, I don't think that she wants to quite run for president yet because she is such a strong progressive. And she, you know, like Bernie Sanders, she can't really fight for her issues. You know, when you're president, you have to be in charge of a lot bigger things than just one thing, you know. And she's really good. She's a bulldog at just one thing. And she needs to, and I think she wants to just stick with that and work with that. But she's, she'll probably run someday. And I agree with you that she would be a good, she's got both the charisma and charm. And she's also honest and people love her. And I think she would do really well.
If Hillary wins, and I think that once people realize that when you get into the general election, Trump's popularity is not going to be that commanding at all. He's got the angry, less than fully educated Republican right that likes him. But when you look at the overall polls, he's not that popular amongst the general population.
Right. He's not, and so that's why I think if Trump gets the nomination, I mean, it's sort of a win-win for Democrats. Even if Bernie Sanders gets the nomination, I think he could still beat Trump, and I think that Hillary could beat Trump. I think people would rally to vote against. But see, the same way that we feel about Trump, the right-wingers feel about a socialist and about Hillary. You know, they don't want either of them. So.
Right. They would love it if Bernie gets nominated. They would be very happy about that. So
they
would. You're right about that.
Yeah, they would. He would be really easy to beat because they could get people to vote against the socialist pretty easily.
But, Trump is called a communist.
Yeah, right. I know. People probably believe it. Remember, they were calling Obama a socialist, and he wasn't even one. So you can imagine. But anyway, should I cut all that out? I probably should, huh? That's just stuff people don't want to hear.
Well, Doctor, if we don't talk about, you talk about statistics and precedent and likelihood and how it's all different. It's all wonky, as I said to you last time. some of the politics and stuff has a lot more feeling in it.
Yeah, but the people want to hear it. I don't think they want to hear it. All right, so basically right now you're right that all the suspense has gone out of the race. We've finally hit that moment where an unpredictable year becomes predictable. And yep. Now we know how it's all going to go, and we all just have to settle with our feelings on that. You know, that's yep. really it. For me, it's like it really does do what Chris Tapley and David Poland have always been saying to me.
Which what is that?
The stats don't matter. The stats don't matter. And I always say, yes, they do matter. Yes, they do matter. And so far, the stats have held all the way up to now. This is the first time. Although BAFTA is so weird because BAFTA is only 2 years old, really, with its current voting practices. So it didn't really technically break any stats yet. But if Revenant wins the Oscar, as we expect it to do, it blows out the stats completely, as Eric was saying on our last podcast. It just blows them out. So it really will be a matter of I will never be able to – I never use critics anymore because of the social network year. Now I won't be able to use any of these others. It'll just be like whatever you think is going to win is going to win and, you know, get out of the way of an epic.
I believe that it's in the air. It's in the pollen of the air. It's in the vibration. You can feel where things are going. All you have to do is just kind of spread your wings and be quiet and listen to the wind hitting against your face. You can feel what's manifesting. It's out there. You know, it's the political stuff, the academy stuff, all these things. You can sense it. When somebody really got hold of a sound, and musically speaking, they are the new thing. You know, you can feel that. You just have to open yourself up to it, I think.
Yeah, I know, but I just started to feel the Revenant just recently when it won the DGA. Like, I didn't feel any buzz for it or heat for it. In fact, I felt the opposite, really. I felt people were, although you know who keeps saying that it's the movie to beat is Rod Lurie. He's the one who's been saying all along that it's going to win Best Picture. It's going to win Best Picture. And I just kept saying, no way, no way, no way. And he's like, it's going to win Best Picture. And he totally turned out to be 100% right. So,
as a final note, I will say that the night that we first saw it, you were 3 seats away from me. And my reaction when it was over was, this is one rough movie.
Yeah.
This is going to be, I don't know what, you know, I know it's expensive. I don't feel at all happy that these guys might not make their money back, but it looks like they're not going to. It's a film for Iñárritu buffs and Lubezki buffs. And people that are into this kind of like raw, open, tough realism that really knocks you back with its exactitude and all the atmospheric. But it's not going to make that much money, and I don't even know how many people are really going to want to see it outside of this small group. Completely wrong in that. But that's what I was thinking. That's what my honest, real opinion was the first time I saw it. Second time, it kicked up, and I went, wait a minute, this is better. I didn't realize. This is better than I thought, but that was my first reaction. You know,
I definitely agree that the second viewing is better, but my experience of it was, you know, I've never seen a movie that rough when you know, it's just, it's too violent. It's hard to watch. You flinch. And you know, we still don't know. It might at the very last second not win Best Picture just because of all these things. There's always that possibility. So we should keep you should just keep 5% of your mind on that. But nonetheless, I would say that I think that the couple of things helped it, which was believe it or not, I think you're saying that women wouldn't go see it. I think that piqued people's curiosity about it because they thought, oh, wow.
I really do think it did. I think that on some level, it definitely spurred women to want to see it, on some level.
And not just women, men, too.
The idea, you know.
And men. I just think yeah, because you were saying that it was too violent, so that piqued the curiosity of men. They thought, oh, this isn't going to be a boring wilderness epic. This is really violent and really hard to watch. I want to see that. And and also the Leo and the bear thing, like at first it seemed like a smear, but really I think that was sort of like Ben Affleck's naked penis in Gone Girl. I think it was something people wanted to see. They wanted to see the bear to see if he had sex with the bear.
You're right. I had to laugh at that because people were talking about that more than anything else.
I know.
When it opened.
And I do think it helps the box office. I really do. I think that people wanted to see it for that reason, but it got them to the theater. And once they saw it, they were like, wow, that's a really incredible movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it still has a lot of really bad reviews. If you go and you go on Metacritic or something and you read the user reviews of people who saw it, they're like, you know, oh, it's just Leo slogging through the forest. It's so boring. Oh God, it's such a, like, it's so, it didn't win everybody over, but in this contest with Mad Max taken out, standing next to The Big Short and Spotlight, it just looks huge. I mean, it just looks like a giant standing next to them, you know? So you think,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you think, how could a film like that compete? Well, Big Short beat it at Producers Guild, and it wasn't up for SAG, so Spotlight never beat The Revenant. It never did. Big Short did, but Spotlight never did. The Revenant beat both Big Short and Spotlight at the DGA, and it just beat them both at BAFTA. So, interesting. It's been an interesting year. I still always wonder how it was The Big Short won the PGA. It'll always be a mystery to me as to how. And I don't believe these people who say, it's so annoying when people say this. I hate this thing. They say, oh, the producers are all analytical about money. That's why they liked The Big Short. I'm like, that's not why they liked it. They don't pick it for that reason. I've never in all the years I've been watching them, have I seen them pick a movie because it was like, you know, every year people say the same thing. Oh, the producers are going to like Avatar because it's made so much money and it's about, like, you know, powerful, you know, producers being successful. Or like with Lincoln, they're going to pick it because it's Kathleen Kennedy and they want to support her. And it just isn't how it works. They pick the movie they like, you know, just like every other group. So the only reason it benefited was something to do with that preferential ballot and a really divisive movie that Revenant is. So those two things together is still an ongoing mystery that we'll have to see how it plays out with the only other preferential ballot in the race, which is the Oscar. So there's only two.
I'm back in Los Angeles, by the way. I just want to tell you, now that we're not recording, or at least you can cut this off, that I've got got Zach with me, and he's been with me for the last four days.
Wait,
he's been staying in my... My cat, Zach, has been with me for the last 3-4 days. Absolutely terrified at going on the freeway, but he crawls under my lap and he sticks his head between my arm and my chest so he can kind of hide his face.
Oh, so cute! So you bring him you brought him to your hotel room with you?
Yeah, well, we're back now. We're now getting off on Coldwater Canyon. I've been talking to you ever since Ventura.
Oh, that's so cute. That's so cute.
Anyway, it's really.
We didn't talk about the director's panel. How was that?
It was congenial, and it wasn't too long. And Scott Feinberg seemed to absorb the suggestions that it would be better if he just made it move along, and he did. It went for 2 hours, but it didn't seem like 2 hours. It felt pretty fast.
Any standouts, or were they? Was Inari 2 on fire, or what? Was it just kind of?
No, he didn't seem on fire. He didn't seem that anxious or hungry or uncertain. He just seemed he was happy to be amongst a group of five. It was more the bon ami thing. It wasn't like, you know, I'm the star here and the rest of you guys are supporting. It was just a very friendly and easy, nice vibe, you know, the whole time. And
yeah,
and it moved along. So.
That's good. All right.
Okay.
Well, another chapter in the year's most unpredictable Oscar race. Oh, another stat, Jeff. We have to talk about another stat. Remember, I'm always saying about how movies and Telluride are the ones that win. This is another stat that just got broken. A totally late breaker.
Yep.
You know, like, winter movie is about to win. So, I mean, we'll have to see. Like, you know, it has to win Best Picture for all of these things to be true. But when you're lining them up, these are the dominoes that are about to fall. Oh, well. All right. So, this was fun. It was nice talking to you. So,
right.
You know, I'm happy that The Big Short is going to win and a Spotlight. They're both, you know what? It's funny. It's because I was looking at 1976 and the year that Rocky won, you know, Network and All the President's Men, they split. They both won in the screenplay categories, and somebody else won. It's one of the few years that screenplay didn't go to a Best Picture winner. And okay. And Rocky came in, and this really feels like that kind of a year, you know, where A Million Dollar Baby was a year like that too, where Clint Eastwood came in at the last minute and he won, and the screenplay awards were split, and so it kind of reminds me of that sort of thing. But I think it's still great that Tom McCarthy and Adam McKay are going to win screenplay awards. I think that's fantastic, and so they go home with Oscars. I mean, it's sort of going to be split, and that's great, you know. What more can you say? I mean, I can't say that The Revenant doesn't deserve to win Best Picture. I don't think anybody could. You know, it deserves it. So it should win, you know. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later.
We'll talk soon. Bye.
Okay, bye. You've been listening to episode 123 of Oscar Poker with Jeffrey Wells from HollywoodElsewhere.com and Sasha Stone from AwardsDaily.com. We'll be back next week. The bumper music was Without You by Rainbow Arabia and Other People by Beach House. Thanks for listening.